You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, of course, this wonderful show, and joining me for our weekly show, because it is the off season, and you'll probably hear from us a lot doing these shows together, from Forbes.com and West Side Naples News, is Tony East. Tony, how are you doing?
I am great. It's weird to be pivoting into off season mode. I'm not going to lie. I watched a lot of playoff basketball today, and it's, you know, even though usually the Pacers don't make it far, it's weird that early in the playoffs, we don't have basketball to cover and we're already in off season mode.
Yeah. Usually we at least get a weekend or two of playoff Pacer basketball.
Yeah. We get like 10 days, 12 days.
Yeah, well, sometimes on a Saturday, usually it takes about four games most of the time. Seven if that one. That one year,
though, I know a lot of you like free agency and trades, and it just so happens that the coach is also up in the air. So there's a lot to consider in the offseason, and that is our show today. Pacers offseason primer. We're talking about everything they have to consider. High level overview, because we'll probably do an individual show about every single one of these decisions, right? Would you say?
Yeah, I think so. But we needed to just like get everybody kind of primed ready to go for the offseason.
And I think it makes sense to know what you need to understand. And if you have questions, because let's get ahead of this now, we're doing a mailbag next week. You can know what you're asking about and not ask stupid questions. Because in the offseason, I get the most stupid questions of anything. Like, can they trade for a guy who has a no trade clause? Or can they sign a guy who's not a free agent? So,
wow, we're 2 minutes in and Tony's already insulting our audience.
I hate free agencies.
Great way to get this offseason started, man.
I'm already ornery, and it's 5 minutes into our first offseason podcast.
We have been planning for like 40 minutes, so we've been like talking for a while, but still, we're only really like all of 3 minutes into the offseason.
So the way we separated out the decisions the Pacers will have to make this summer is group one, the obvious thing, free agents, their own guys who are going to for sure be free agents. Their contract expires, no doubt. Nothing has to happen. They just expire. Should the Pacers bring them back, what do they have to think about there? The second one is sort of a hodgepodge of two things. One is, should the Pacers bring this guy back group? So guys with a team option or non-guarantee in their contract. And the second half is conflicting interests of roster building. It's kind of hard to explain that. We'll get to that. And then the third segment is just other. It's stuff that the Pacers will certainly be thinking about and will be big topics for this team for all of the offseason. You know, from, I don't want to spoil too many of them, but like Bjorkgren's one of them and the draft pick is one of them. And there's a few more. So we're going to start with free agency, everybody's favorite thing, right?
Yeah, so I think we should start by citing a really reputable source in terms of their the cap sheet. His name is Tony East. You can follow him on East NBA. And he has a cap sheet that shows the Pacers have basically $145 million worth of guaranteed and cap holds, and then $113 of guaranteed salaries. That includes cap holds for agents like Doug McDermott, TJ McConnell, Jakar Sampson are the big three free agents. And then there's some team options for Keelan Martin and O'Shea Brissett. There's a decision on Cassius Stanley, and there's a player option, right?
Team
option on Edmund Sumner as well.
Yeah, so they're over the cap for sure, right? Before we even talk about the offseason forever, for the Pacers to get cap space, they would have to trade they would have to not bring back McDermott or McConnell or Sampson or the 13th pick and trade away numerous players, more than one. Well, one would work, but it would not be enough cap space to be a big deal unless it was either Turner, Sabonis, or Brogdon. So I, for the sake of the whole offseason, just assume the Pacers are over the cap. They can only sign free agents that were on their team last year or with the mid-level exception.
Yeah, so, I mean, we should say the Pacers have basically been building their roster for this year and next year. I mean, that's been every sign, every player they've extended, every guy they've traded for has had a contract that was a major player, had a contract guaranteed for next season and possibly one after that, but that's about it.
Yeah, if you look at the cap sheet, and before this is the last thing before we get to the free agents, right? Brogdon, 2 more years. Sabonis, 3 more years. Turner, 2 more years. LeVert, 2 more years. Justin Holiday, 2 more years. It's kind of clear what timeline they'd be looking at in terms of growing the current core. So when you look at free agents and using the MLE and how they could structure this stuff and money to get out of and all those decisions, that's kind of the time frame you're staring at.
So what you mean is be planning for your 2024 free agency to discuss what player the Pacers decide that they can never sign.
You know, that podcast from 3 years from now, yes, we can maybe start planning the seeds on that today.
But yeah.
Adam, who are the Pacers' 4 free agents?
Oh, who are the 4? The 4 free agents are pretty simple. McDermott, McConnell, Sampson, and Cassius Stanley. I think there's a clear delineation between two of those and two of the other ones, put it that way.
Yeah, let's spend more time on the mix, as we'll call them, the McDonald's guys. So who do you want to start with, McConnell or McDermott? Let's just go alphabetically. TJ McConnell's up first.
Okay, yeah.
TJ McConnell, let's start with what they can offer him, okay? So he's an early bird free agent. They can offer him up to 120% of the league average salary from the year before on a four-year deal, or 100 and something crazy percent of his previous salary, but it doesn't matter. It's going to be like up to four-year deal that starts at about like 12 million. I don't have it exactly in front of me, but something like that. Like the max they could offer him is 4 for 50. That's too much, but that's just using his bird rights and his cap hold. So keeping his cap hold on the books makes a lot of sense, so they can re-sign him to a big deal, or they could use the MLE, but that would be stupid because they could just use his early bird rights. What would you say is the max you'd pay for McConnell per year?
So to me, it depends. And I'm caveating this right now, but okay. Are the Pacers willing to go into luxury tax? Because then there's a little bit more reason. And let's assume not, because they're not. And honestly, they're not a championship caliber team right now. That's really the only time you should pay luxury tax salaries, is when you have a legit shot.
Even if you think you'll be good, like you'll win one run in the playoffs, I can understand paying luxury tax, but they just didn't make the playoffs, right?
Yeah, so we're going to assume...
You don't make that gamble.
We're going to assume they have a self-imposed cap of $136 million, which is the tax line next year. So I'm going to guess to be able to keep him and be competitive for other guys, I would probably look at like a $7 to $8 million range, and probably more like $7.
So let's go through some guys from last free agency, and you tell me if this player is better or worse than TJ McConnell, okay?
Okay.
Jordan Clarkson.
Better right now, at least.
Okay. Jordan Clarkson signed a four-year, $52 million contract last summer with the Utah Jazz. I agree with you, by the way, Clarkson.
Was he better? I guess he was. He's always been.
It was close. It was pretty close.
Yeah.
Rodney Hood.
Slightly better, I guess.
That one's close. I agree with you. That one's close.
Clarkson, the thing, Clarkson right now, obviously, is like way better.
I mean, yeah, definitely. Like, but that's like you can't predict. You have to, you're right. You have to think, okay, 2020 free agency, what did people think of this guy?
But the Jazz, we should also say, have been experts at slightly overpaying for guys I think we both thought are not worth it, but definitely fit to whatever they do and come to Utah and all of a sudden they excel like crazy.
I agree with that. Okay. Rodney Hood, you said about equal. I would say that Rodney Hood probably has a little less value back then just because he was coming off an injury, but yeah, mostly equal. He got 2 for 21.
Okay. So the other question I would say is there was more salary cap money last year than this year, right? But it doesn't matter because he's
under the MLE. No, it's about the same. It's close.
He's under the MLE, so it doesn't really matter as much.
Yeah.
That's most teams
have. Okay. One more guy.
Give it to
Pat
me.
Connaughton. This shouldn't be this hard.
Worse, right?
Or yes.
Okay, yeah.
Good. Pat Connaughton got 3 for 16. So that was a lot of talking for me to say. Rodney Hood is the closest, I think, and he got about $10 million a year. A lot of people thought that was an overpay at the time it happened, but I think McConnell in the 8 to 10 range is going to shake out to be what his market value shakes out to be.
Yeah, I think the one that McConnell has not going for him is he doesn't have the shooting, and he has to be the dominant ball point guard, which is can make him less value. Like Clarkson can play off the ball a little bit. McConnell can, but really for him to be his most effective, he has to have the ball in his hands. And a lot of teams have really good point guards and just don't want that, right? Like Clarkson's value that he can play with the bench and theoretically start next to a guy like Conley when there's injury, where I'm not sure McConnell has that same value. Now he's done it this year out of like necessity pretty much, but I'm not sure you could say like, I want that to be the way, right? If you're a team that has a really good point guard, we were okay with McConnell, you know, being the kind of like number two if there's a bunch of injuries or whatnot.
Right. And we'll run through it. We're going to do a whole show this offseason about all these guys, like one full show on just TJ McConnell's free agency and one on all of them. It's all super important. But yeah, the McConnell consideration is tough. They have some other guards on the team already. The luxury tax is right there. He was clearly very good. You know, you could argue he was the sixth man of the year for the team. Actually, no, never mind. You couldn't argue it because it's a fact. He was the sixth man of the year for this team.
Well, wait, did he start too many games, though? How many games did he start?
No, he started 3 games.
Oh, he did? Why do I feel like he started so many? He played a lot of minutes. He ended up playing like a starter.
He played like 40 minutes when he did start, so it felt like those games were.
Well, he played 26 minutes a game. That's pretty good. That's a lot of minutes.
Yeah. So obviously the considerations for him, I think, are actually the hardest of any player because they have a lot of guards already, but he's better than all of them, right? So him not coming back obviously would hurt their bench, but they could more easily fill his empty spot than their other key free agent, who, again, we'll do a full show on all these guys, Doug McDermott. This one's a little easier to describe what they can offer him, because he has full bird rights. They can offer him anything, literally any legal contract. Doug McDermott can get it. They could offer him the max. Will they offer him the max? Absolutely not. But he is a hard guy for me to pin down value on. I have two names from last summer's free agency, if you're ready.
All right, throw them.
One is Joe Harris. I think this is going to be a name we talk about a lot.
Joe Harris is better.
Joe Harris was better and is better. He got 4 for $75 million. That's a lot of bones.
But that was a massive overpay because they had the roster to do it.
Full bird rides trap, baby. You were right. Okay, here's another one. This one's tough. We have to remember how good he was in the bubble last year. Jay Crowder.
Better defender, not better shooter. Has probably more value in the league because of past history where he definitely has at his peak been better than McDermott. But like at the very moment, they're probably pretty close.
Yeah, that one is close. Okay, I like the Jay Crowder comp a little bit. And he was coming off a pretty bad shooting year, although he shot bad with Memphis and awesome with the Heat. Like, awesome.
He just has that, like, also, you just, like, have a vibe. Remember he had that really couple of years with Boston back in
the very
like,
good for them.
Yeah. Right, 15, 16, 16, 17 range. And so, like, he just feels like a guy who, like, can guard other teams, like, best player a lot of times, which is a huge value. Now, I'm not sure he can, but that's, like, is a perception that he could, at least, at times.
So, Jay Crowder got 3 for $30 million, basically the MLE from the, actually not basically. No need just to beat around the bush. He got the MLE from the Suns.
So, yeah, I think the thing with McDermott is him not shooting 40% might actually
huge for the Pacers.
Yeah, like if he had shot 40, like there's something about that 40 line that's like a big like deal.
I agree. When I sort by like stuff for shooting, I use 40%.
Even though like 38.8 is like very, very good and like almost 40. Like it's
He was clearly better than last year, but his percentages don't really reflect it. It's hard to explain. Well, not to you guys who listen. You all watch Doug McDermott. So McDermott, I think 3 for $30 million is good. That Crowder line is close. He's a much better offense player than Jay Crowder. Shooting is something important to him and other teams. A lot of, like the cap space around the league is kind of interesting. There'll be a fair number of teams with cap space, but they probably won't prioritize a guy like Doug McDermott. You know what I mean? So I kind of feel like the mid-level exception offers for him are going to be plentiful. So if they can get a tick above that and like get to 3 for $35 million, does that get it done? Maybe. And they can really use forwards and wings. You know, and it's not like McConnell where they have other guys waiting in the wing who aren't as good. Like they have nothing behind
them. Right. So could the big one be obviously that Miami goes after him?
Yeah, they love those shooters.
Well, right, because if they're not able to find a superstar, they're not going to – I think they're going to be thick on anything. So, like, if I can't get a big guy, did they just start kind of overpaying for some of the shooters? That's a very classic Miami thing. And they're the, like – The most competitive team to have a ton of space.
Yeah. Yeah, that's possible. Like a lot of teams could want to do that, really. Like we talked about this with Justin Holiday last summer. The reason we both thought he would get a lot more is because we both thought that all these teams are gonna be like, oh my gosh, this is a perfect fit for our competitive team. This guy's a 3-and-D player who's established himself on a good team. And we were like, oh, he's gonna get all these mid-level offers, and then he signed for the first day. So signed for his cheaper deal on the first day. So maybe we're a little overrating what these guys are, but to me, it just feels like, you know, if the bar is set at the mid-level, that could actually help the Pacers a little bit because then they could get him for just over that, which isn't even that big of an overpay on like a shorter-ish deal. We'll see though.
Yeah, I guess the thing I'd say is 10 is might be a weird ceiling for him because not a lot of teams can offer him more than that like want to pay. Like, because right, you're I don't see a team that's like in the bottom of the league. I guess we saw a little bit, like really trying to like make McDermott a priority, right? Like, I'm not even sure he wants to go back to that. All the Pacers were that this year, so maybe he doesn't care. But like, right, he was with like the Knicks and the Bulls and the Mavs when they were bad for a while. And he feels like the kind of guy
he likes Indiana for all the questions about his career.
Okay. I mean,
actually, every guy kissed some ass to the Pacers in their next interview. So don't read into that stuff too much. They're all going to do that. But
yeah. I just wonder if he's in a stage of career now where it's like, maybe he doesn't need to make 14. Maybe he can make 10 and go play on like a top tier team, let's say.
The other two guys are a lot easier to discuss.
Yeah, so, we can breeze through them real fast.
Jakar Sampson. I don't even need to come up with comps for you because Jakar Sampson is a minimum player.
Yep.
Jakar Sampson is good. They brought good. Might be a stretch. Jakar Sampson is – I just called him guitar. That's a new one.
He's playable when you need to play him.
Yeah, but there's like they just got Keelan Martin and he was the same thing. You know what I mean? Like he's a forward who's playable when you need him, right? There's like
Carr's above average journeyman player.
There's 20 of those guys you can get any year. So nothing about Jakar specifically is helpful for them unless they have just no center depth going into next year. So same deal as last year. If he wants to come back and maybe I'll give him the minimum, I guess that's fine. But I kind of feel like the Sampson Pacers marriage will come to an end just because it's been 2 years of kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
He might want to look for a different situation. Not that this is bad for him. He's from Cleveland area, right? It's kind of close to home and
He might just want to see if he can be like the 10th man on a team and play a little more
minutes. Yeah, he got the fully guaranteed deal too, which for him, given how much he's bounced around in his career, right? 4 or 5 teams in his 7-year career, right? Getting a fully guaranteed deal from a team is a huge deal. But yep. I agree with you that he might be sniffing out bigger deals, a bigger role somewhere if he can get it. Not saying he can. So we'll see. But he's a minimum guy, right? If he wants more than that, the Pacers can easily say, see ya.
Yep. I agree.
Cassius is even more confusing.
So
go ahead.
Right. The options for Cassius are 2-way or somehow get him to a contract, right? But he's probably just shown enough to deserve a contract yet.
Yeah, that's the discussion with him. And that'll be what we talk about when we do the Cassius Stanley free agency show is like, remember Brian Bowen from last year? It was similar. Brian Bowen started that one random game and was like kind of helpful for the Pacers 2 years ago, I guess, but was mostly just like a 2-way guy who did stuff with the Mad Ants and was not that impressive. Stanley was kind of the same this year, right? Some nice moments with the G League, but not really great with them. Not really awesome in his moments with the Pacers, but still has a really intriguing athleticism that needs to be explored. Had some nice moments that you make you go, you know what? Yeah, we drafted this guy. We clearly like what he can do. Let's give him another 2-way. Brian Bowen took it, and they can make him a restricted free agent, right? They can always, I mean, this is kind of a dick move to strong arm these dudes on 2-way deals, but if the Pacers want to, they can be like, look, we will give you a qualifying offer and make you restricted. You will go to no other team and then bring him back pretty easily. So if they want him, they can very easily have him back on either a 2-way or a minimum deal next year. So his free agency is basically do the Pacers like him.
Yeah, I think that the comp or the path, maybe the path, better way to put this, is Sumner, right? Sumner was 2 years as a 2-way player and then got a deal. Second round pick, similar range. Sumner had come from an injury, so he had to sort of prove himself as a healthy player. Stanley just has to kind of prove himself as, like, can he be a basically the what Sumner was what last year, or not last year, 2 seasons ago, I guess kind of like 11th, 12th man, maybe competing for the 9 spot. Sumner obviously now is probably in the rotation going forward. So yeah, I mean, I think 2-way probably makes sense. We'll see though.
Another guy, former Pacer, who's a reasonable comp for the path. You remember Alex Poitras from the first year they had the 2-way contracts. He got the 2-way and then got converted mid-year, right, when he impressed, then played out on that, played pretty well for them. Eventually, Trevor Booker was signed to take his spot, but was helpful, and that leapfrogged him into another full contract with the Atlanta Hawks for next year, right? So coming back on that 2-way, if you can get it, even if you haven't played much, has value to these guys who have had small roles and are still young. So I think this one's simple. If the Pacers like him, they'll bring him back, probably on a 2-way, maybe on a minimum deal for the other roster. Who knows? Who cares? But I understand that, you know, these 2-way guys want to get the biggest role they can get. And there's no point of strong arming these young guys.
I agree with you. And so I think next we're going to talk about some of the things the Pacers actually control, right? Some of their decision making and the players they have actually control over.
This section was guys who, if they don't want to come back to the Pacers, even if the Pacers offer them the most money, if they just hate the Pacers, they could go somewhere else. I guess Cassius could be restricted and that could not be the case. But in theory, all these guys, if they don't want to come back, wouldn't come back.
Yeah, but next, the Pacers actually have control of these guys. And that's what we're going to talk about next. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by our wonderful friends over at Headspace. Wouldn't it be great if there were a pocket-sized guide that helped you sleep, focus, act, and be better? There is. And if you have 10 minutes, Headspace can change your life. Headspace is your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of a guided meditation and an easy-to-use app. Headspace is one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. So whatever situation, Headspace can really help you feel better. Overwhelmed? Headspace has a 3-minute SOS meditation for you. It's about falling asleep. Headspace has a wind-down sessions their members swear by. And for parents, Headspace even has morning meditation to do with your kids. So Headspace can bring you the mindfulness, reduce stress, improve sleep, boost focus, and increase your overall sense of well-being. Headspace is backed by 25 published studies on its benefits, 600,000 five-star reviews, and over 60 million downloads. Headspace makes it easy for you to build a life-changing meditation practice with mindfulness that works for you on your schedule, anytime, anywhere. You deserve to feel happier. Headspace meditation is made simple. Go to headspace.com/lockedonmba. That's LOCKEDON MBA. That's headspace.com/lockedonmba for a free 1-month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. And we are also brought to you by our wonderful friends over at Built Bar. Built Bar has been a long, long time sponsor of this podcast. I think almost been over a year since they started sponsoring this podcast. And they make these amazing protein bars that are 100% covered in chocolate. They come in 9 delicious flavors and then a bunch of limited ones that, you know, come throughout the year. They come in all kinds of different ones. My favorite one is the peanut butter brownie one, which I talked gushed about forever. It is a 18 grams of protein, 180 calories protein bar. That's great if you're trying to indulge in a snack, maintain or lose weight. It's just a great thing to have on the go. I'm a big fan of it. And right now, if you go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15, you get 15% off your next order. I can't say enough good things about Built Bar. It's a wonderful protein bar. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your next order at builtbar.com. All right, Tony, where do you want to start with this? You want to go with the, like, well, I don't know, any of these are easy, but what one of the three players you want to start with?
I think we should explain the decision difference here.
Okay, go ahead.
Sort of. Okay, the three players are Keelan Martin, O'Shea Brissett, and Edmund Sumner. Edmund Sumner has a team option, so basically the Pacers can decide to decline the option and if that and make him a free agent or pick up the option, he's on the team. It's in the Pacers' control. That's the difference between that and a player option.
Does he have – this is last year of his deal?
Correct. This is the last – next year's last year of his deal.
With him, I guess it's the question of free agency. Do you try to extend him to prevent him going to free agency next year or
– we'll talk about that in a moment.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Keelan Martin and O'Shea Brissett's deals are non-guaranteed. The little difference there is – instead of the team just declining the option, they have to waive you and you go through waivers. And once that happens, you can't re-sign the guy to another deal. They're just gonzo. Keelan Martin's non-guaranteed deals at the minimum. So is O'Shea's. And then O'Shea has an additional season after the upcoming one. So let's start with O'Shea. You know why we're going to start with O'Shea, Adam, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're picking up team option as soon as
possible. Because it's the far and away the easiest decision here. They will not be waiving O'Shea Brissett. He will come into camp on his non-guaranteed season next year. Honestly, some teams did it this year for guys that really impressed. I forget who the Rockets did it for. I should know this. But there are some guys who were on not fully non-guaranteed deals. Solomon Hill had this happen to him, for example. He was on a fully non-guaranteed minimum deal, and he impressed so much with the Hawks, they just said, we're going to guarantee it. I would not be surprised if the Pacers just did that for O'Shea, because he's basically allowed to make the roster next year anyway.
So I'm looking 2 years down the line. Then he has a situation as Sumner, right, where you can decline it and then give him an extended deal or pick it up and right.
Correct. I mean, well, with his team option too, he'll only have 3 years in the league. So if they decline his team option, he'll be a restricted free agent, and they can for sure keep him. So they will almost certainly do that. Yes.
Okay. Well, the goal with him, I mean, right now is he looks like
awesome.
Awesome. Like I don't know the ceiling for him. I mean, could he end up being a starter someday on his team? I wouldn't be surprised by that, depending on how things go with other major decisions this offseason. So yeah, you bring him back, get him paid, make him happy, want him to work, keep working his ass off and playing the way he's played. And I mean, this, you know,
he's really good on a non-guaranteed minimum deal. He's back. Like, there's no thought to that one.
He's their only four in the roster pretty much currently anyways.
So would you rather do Keelan Martin next or Edmund Sumner?
Let's do Martin real quick, because I think we'll have a longer Sumner discussion.
Yeah, Martin can, like, if on April 30th, this one's like so easy. You know, he's not coming back, right? He had some fine spot minutes, had a nice game against the Spurs. Cool, but like, they'd rather just sign a different minimum guy, right? They could sign one of their second round picks to a cheaper deal, see how that guy looks or something. You know, there's just similar uses to the same roster spot, and the minimum is cheaper for that guy. So I'd have said Keelan Martin's gone. But then he had an awesome May where he won them two games and was in their rotation in the play-in games and showed off some nice defensive stuff and had some hot shooting games. So proved that he is good. Well, you know, he proved that he can be an end of bench guy for an NBA team. The question is it worth bringing him back? And I think I still lean no. I think I'd lean that I would waive him, free up that little bit of room away from the tax and sign a cheaper minimum guy. But I understand if they bring him back, because he did have a very nice end of the season.
Yeah, and they don't need the roster spot, right?
Not really, no.
Right, I mean, it really just depends what's out there, I guess, right? Does there somebody that really catches their eye? But I guess I'm more a fan of bringing back guys in multiple years, because I do think there's something about continuity and building that, and especially
if continuity got them nothing last year.
Well, I'm trying to think, who was the two last year?
Only two new guys last year were Keelan Martin and Jalen LeCue.
Yeah, but the continuity guy would be Jakar, right? The Barnback second year, and he was pretty deep. I mean, he's already decent before, so I don't know that. But like, I just that's mean there's something with
Justin
younger.
Holiday. Yeah.
There is something with younger guys that just, like I said, just some continuity of like, if you have for multiple years that maybe, and especially they show some signs, I think maybe like pop a little bit, like Sumner's a great example of that, right? Like first years, you know, you had high potential of him, but like, we didn't really know, but you just kept coming back and all of a sudden now he's a rotation player, like pretty clearly. So there's something about that. So unless they like really somebody else catches their eye, I'm not sure that it's like that bad just to bring him back on whatever he has, but it's going to come in like cap considerations and all that other stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I agree with you that they can always grow. And clearly, he showed some of that. But also, if there's a new coach, maybe they would just value bringing in one of their own
low-level
guys. Who knows?
And who knows? Been like with could end up with another like a late somewhere else pick they want to do, like with a second round or whatever they want to put a guy. Like, who knows? I mean, I'm not gonna like think you should like stick your foot in the sand. Like, gotta keep Keelan Martin. But I mean,
yeah, I agree.
If there isn't anything better out there, and you like what you saw this year, there's not a problem bringing it back.
Even so, my super dumb reason why I think they don't bring back Keelan is because they could get a cheaper minimum guy and save like $400,000 against the tax. And then even with Keelan, right? Remember, he entered the year on a half guaranteed deal, right? They could do that even, and then have a free roster spot midseason, save some money that way. So it's like, he wasn't quite good enough to me to not take that other advantage of the savings, but I would understand it. Another key distinction I want to make here between O'Shea Brissett and Keelan Martin's contracts. O'Shea Brissett's guarantee date is in 2022, right? It's way out from now. Okay. So he's going to be in camp for sure. They could cut him midseason if he like breaks both of his legs or something and then get out of his deal.
Please don't put that into existence.
I know. I'm explaining why they would cut him. They're not going to cut O'Shea Brissett.
They're going to guarantee his deal, I'd hope, like before the summer ends.
Yeah, I would think they will too. So his contract guarantees January 7th, 2022. It's not guaranteed until then. So Keelan Martin's is different. Keelan Martin's contract guarantees. Oh man, I can't even find the date. There we go. One day after the moratorium starts, which is August 3rd. Or maybe it's one day after it ends, would be August 7th. That's before training camp, right? So if they would have to let him go if he wants to go to a different team for camp, or if they want him into camp, they have to guarantee his full deal for next year earlier. That makes me think it's even less likely he comes back because they have to make that decision prior to free agency.
Yeah. Okay. I mean,
I think O'Shea is more likely to come back. Let's do the interesting one.
Yeah. Go to Sumner.
So Adam brought this up last segment, which is good because this explains the big difference between non-guarantees and team options. If a non-guaranteed guys, like the two guys we just said, if they waive them, they cannot bring that guy back this season. With a team option, if you decline it, you can still sign the guy to a new deal. So if we go back in time, Edmund Sumner, after his second year, remember, he got that contract converted from his two-way, which was a minimum 1 year and then a team option on the second year. And they went into the summer and they said, hey, Ed, you have that team option. We're going to pick it up and bring you back if we want you. But if you want, we can get a longer deal agreed on and we'll just decline it for you. And then he was okay with that. They got him in on this 3-year deal they have him on now. So he got a longer deal with more money and the option was declined. So with Sumner, I think I would negotiate this similarly with him this offseason because he keeps growing every year. He looks awesome. He's worth way more than the $2.3 million on his current deal. So I think it's kind of tricky because of the tax considerations, but I think they should try to walk into it and say something similar like, hey, we've got your full bird rights. We can decline your team option, sign you to a more fair deal that's longer, but we want you back either way. So if you're not amenable to that, we're still going to bring you back.
So the tax thing is the biggest issue, right? So like,
yes,
right. You can do
giving him a raise is scary when it comes to their other free agents.
Yeah. And so how big of an increase can you do year to year, right? So like, let's say he started at like, let's say making, and this is probably too low, like he made $4 million in the first year. They could do a 3 year and give him was it 15% increases over years, year over year?
8% is the biggest raise you can give.
8%. Okay. I couldn't remember if there was something.
Yep.
Okay. So in our open market, like what is Sumner really worth? You think probably like 5 to 7?
20 or something.
Three for 20? 15. Yeah. Okay. We're saying.
No, rate. 3 for 15 is a little low. I don't know.
I was thinking 5 to 7. So 3 for 20 is like right in the middle of that. So it's fine. It's about the same. And,
Justin Holliday's deal last year feels.
Fun. Right. And so the problem with Sumner is you need a point guard. Like Sumner is kind of more a two guard, which is really good for a spot. But like they need a bench point guard and they need McConnell for that. So then where are they getting that point guard in their bench if they're paying Sumner $5 million? Because that's where all that money went. Right. So in some ways, you just rather pick up his team option is really low. And you just, does he become unrestricted though next year then?
Yes, he does.
But Dad, you
would be unrestricted either way. There's no.
I think though you roll the dice on that, and you just because I think a lot in the next year can change. I mean, you have Lamb
could extend him mid-season too if they pick it up on the low, and then they'd be adding on to the end of his lower number, which maybe that's what they want.
Yeah, but like the Lamb's contract could come up now. There's also you could make a case to me, and we'll do this. But like you could see a couple bigger salaries get moved the roster, and then to make room for guys like get some extension one. I could see that being part of the move. But like I don't know. I feel like it seems just safer if you're worried if your luxury tax is your salary cap to just pick up the option now and figure it out because
well, it is in this section. The salary dump discussion we're going to have is in this segment of the show. So let's work this in now, right?
Yeah.
Like giving Sumner a raise means you have to dump money to keep your key guys. Whoa. Or if you want to keep both McDermott and McConnell, you got to dump a key guy making some money, right?
There's 14 million dollars out there, $14.5 million of players that don't need to be on the roster next year.
You can
name players Jeremy Lamb and Aaron Holiday.
Yeah, if they get rid of both, then you really want Sumner and McConnell back. But I agree.
But that's the goal. I mean, you get rid of both to do that. Like, that's what you would do. But I'm not sure.
One of us was pushing really hard for a Jeremy Lamb trade back in March.
I was pushing for that trade too. I was like, they're not going to do it. I don't even know
if it was out there. I'm not flaming anyone for anything. I think it would have made so much sense to trade Jeremy Lamb 4 months ago. But whatever. Anyway, yeah, I agree with you that. And Lamb is expiring now. That has a little more value to some of these teams. But the thing is, before you just spit out, listener, that, oh, expiring has more value. He has more value. No, technically, but that's in exchange for a longer deal from another team who's trying to get off money. And the Pacers don't want a longer deal with more money.
Well, what you could do is you could figure out a way to flip that and flip the longer deal to somebody else. I don't know. Maybe
it's complicated.
Yeah, or maybe that's how you get your point guard. Maybe you decide you don't want McConnell or McDermott, and that's how you get another player that you like.
That is a fair thought. You use your salary dump to get the player you need to replace the guy that you're losing. Yeah. But yeah, I agree with you that if they're going to salary dump Aaron Holiday at $4 million or Jeremy Lamb at $10.5 million makes the most sense.
Yeah, because neither guy was playing significantly important minutes by the end of the season, right?
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, and doing so would, like, let's say they get off of both those guys. And I'm highly doubting they'll get off both given their guard situation. But if they're able to, then maybe you can turn to Sumner and go, well, look, we have all the space for you. Let's decline your option and renegotiate again. So some of it's all very fluid and connected, and that's why that's in the section. And that's why the other consideration, and this will be a whole show later this summer that will be very interesting, is if they can't salary dump, they probably can only – let me rephrase probably here. Given the luxury tax, they can only keep one, basically, of McDermott or McConnell, unless one of them takes way less money than both of us just predicted they would
get. Or unless they go on luxury tax and we're not – we just don't realize they're going to do it. But
yeah,
yes.
They're not going to go on luxury tax.
I know. I'm just saying. You have to put that out there. You have to say that at least.
I know we always have to say it because, like – technically, all of our thoughts about their offseason gets blown up if they're willing to go on the tax. But if they're willing to go on the tax, they wouldn't have made the TJ Leaf salary dump last summer. And they were in a much more promising position last summer than they are right now.
Because you weren't going to play Leaf. It was useless money.
Okay. Well, you're not going to play Aaron Holiday that much.
I know. No, it's fair. I mean, you would try to figure out. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
So if you have to keep one of those guys, then your decisions become a little more hairy as well, right? And we kind of talked about the considerations last segment. Like, they already have a lot of guards, but McConnell was a little better, but shooting is really important, right? So that's another thing to consider as they kind of leap through all these holes of deciding who to bring back and what options to keep is which of these guys is more likely to be back. And it might even come down to which one of them is willing to take a smaller deal, right? It's very fluid given all the other stuff going on, and it could have ripple effects on every other decision they make.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing to look at this offseason, and we'll do this like a next segment, is like what the pickets are being and how much guaranteed money that player has to be on the cap sheet. But then it's what do you do with Holiday and Lamb, because that will kind of indicate the rest of the moves, because that's
where the money is. We said that with Leaf too, remember? We were like, you know what? If they dump Leaf, we know they're going to get someone back. And it was Justin Holiday, and we were right. So I'm imagining we're going to know something similar this year.
Yeah, and the question, I mean, go back to our show from last week, but like if they get rid of Lamb and Holiday to keep McDermott and McConnell, then they really haven't made any real roster changes this year. That year.
Right.
O'Shea is the big change, and the pick would be the change. And
well, we expected continuity last year, remember? And we do not this time.
Well,
so
maybe you don't.
You don't expect it. You just think it's possible.
Also, they did make a move midseason that is kind of a move.
Yes, right? I agree with that.
Like, cares is a move.
We were planning for the discussion of last offseason.
Yes.
We talked about depot trades. Although, again, we also both said that it wouldn't happen until the season.
I think they're
just patting us on the back, just so you guys know the series.
Now we're just in the bragging segment.
I just think that explaining everything from a cap perspective allows listeners and us to get on the same page of like, this is why it's more possible to predict this stuff once you know the rules. Because if you don't know the rules, it makes it really hard to be like, oh, they need to get rid of these three players. These guys aren't helpful for them. They need to replace these guys. Well, they can't, right? Replacing them is like, oh, we replaced Malcolm Brogdon with Pat Connaughton, right? Like, that's the money exchange you have to make when you're over the cap or in the situation. And so,
if anybody made that move, they should be fired the next.
Exactly. That's the kind of sticky situations they get caught in. So that's how we're able to predict what's going to happen. And because we just ran through this, why I think not substantial, although we'll get to the big one in a second, but somewhat a player over 10 million or more on the roster from last year is not back.
Yeah. All right. So do you have enough? Do you do enough on the salary dump, or do you?
We're good. We're good.
Okay. All right. So let's do this. We've got, like, we'll call them high level, just like things that could happen next this summer. The others maybe. But so we're going to do that next. But first, today's Locked On Patriots podcast is also brought to you by our wonderful friends over at Indeed. You're the hiring expert for your company. What you really need is help making your short list of qualified candidates. You need a hiring partner who helps you make your life easier. You need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, interview, all on Indeed. Get quality shows of candidates whose resumes are on Indeed, match your job description faster, only pay for the candidates that meet your must-have qualification and schedule, and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy with tools like the Indeed Instant Match, giving you quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed to fit your job description immediately, and Indeed skills tests that on average reduce hiring time by 27%. You can choose from more than 130 skill tests and then add your must-have requirements so only pay for applications that meet them. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than any other job site combined. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post on Indeed.com when you use promo code LOCKED. So it's Indeed.com/LOCKED for a $75 credit. Indeed.com/LOCKED. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. So we are in our other section, and I teased this out earlier, so I'm going to start with it. We have 4 things kind of written down for other. One of them is the 13th overall pick, and it's a pretty quick one I think we can do, and it's basically the salary of that pick could influence their luxury tax threshold. So if they jump from 13 to the top 4, basically it goes from being what, a $3.6 million, Tony, to like a $6 or $7 to $8 million salary.
Yep. Yep.
And that's basically it. I mean, there's not much else to it.
Then you're really stuck on what you're choosing between. But the other thing is, if that does happen.
Yeah. Oh no, we have a top 4 pick. We can't.
Well, and it's like, presumably, and I mean presumably as in a lot of these top 4 players are good enough that you're like, oh, this is a TJ McConnell's gone. We just drafted our backup point guard. You know what I mean?
Oh no, we just got Jalen Suggs, right? That's the guy from
Yeah.
Oh no, we got Jalen Suggs. What are we gonna do? We can't keep TJ McConnell. Okay,
Cade Cunningham. Sorry, Doug McDermott. You know, we're giving your minutes to Cade Cunningham.
Yes,
that is certainly true. But yeah, they're picking 13th. That picks salary, or they're likely picking 13th. That picks salary / cap holds about $3.7 million. That's fine.
I can't wait until they pick 14th some stupid way.
The only way that happened, who's 14th? The Golden State Warriors have to pick top 4. Oh, my
I know. God, wouldn't that be hilarious though? But they picked 14th. They picked 14th for all this, and we're off by like $300,000, something stupid like that.
Yeah, it wouldn't matter. I mean, maybe it does. That'd be funny.
You would be off by like a slight a little bit.
I think. I'm imagining they make that pick just given where they are cap wise and youth pipeline wise, especially if we'll talk about Aaron Holiday a lot this segment. If Aaron Holiday is not on the team next year, their youth pipeline is like Brissett, Goga, and that's kind of it. So they Sumner really need
youth? No or no?
Huh?
Sumner no longer youth pipeline.
You need 26.
Okay, I mean that's fine. I was just curious.
I mean, I might be wrong there. Am I missing someone?
No,
Goga. I mean no. They're kind of looking at old guys at this point.
Yeah, I mean Sumner. I just whether you want to count that or not, but I agree. Goga and O'Shea, the really young players.
Yeah, Aaron Holiday will be turning 26 next season, and Edmund Sumner will also be turning 26.
Yeah, in the end of the year.
So. And Aaron Holiday is the 4th youngest player on the team this year. I guess I forgot Cassius. Pardon me. But yeah, they're like significant in the rotation youth pipeline is just O'Shea and Goga. And they're both, you know, utility guys, good, going to be in rotation for a while, but they need more than that. You know, so if Aaron's off the team, I think they need.
Yeah, you want
it. But we'll talk about those considerations later in the offseason as well.
Well, people wonder why the Pacers have too many like salaries in like the, let's call it 10 to 20 range or 15 to 20 range, because they mainly have veterans. They like their biggest moves in the past 3 years have been to get veteran players like Karras, like TJ Warren, and then to re-sign guys that they actually developed.
They have a shocking number of players born from 1992 to 1994, like over half their roster. So
yeah, and it should make them, they should be in like their peak seasons now. It's unfortunate. Anyways.
All right, that one's the easy one. This one we kind of talked about last Friday and is sort of dynamic. There's no new info here. The coaching change, what's going to happen there? Does that influence their roster decisions? Does that influence anything else that happens this summer? Who knows? we'll have to see what even develops from that situation. But that's going to be the first thing that happens. So, if we had to put these in an order, is they make their decision on their coach for next year. Is it Nate Bjorkgren? If it's not Nate Bjorkgren, well, I guess we won't know who for a while, but like, what considerations do they have for their next coach? What do they need? What fits the guys they have? What fits the guys they might have? All that kind of stuff.
So over under 5.5 days before Bjorkgren gets fired. That's today. Very specific. We're recording Sunday at 10:30 Eastern.
I'll say over, but barely.
Okay. So 5.5. I say 4.5 or 5.5.
Well, I don't know how. I don't know.
5.5 puts it. Wait, does he get fired Friday or not? That's before Friday or not.
Yeah, I bet he gets passed this week, but well, I don't know.
Okay, that's fair. I was just curious. We'll see.
I don't really know. I honestly think, I don't know.
They could take a decent amount of time. We were doing this before. There is no other coach opening right now.
There's no rush. There's no rush, yes.
Yeah, so there's no, I mean, there's not competing with anybody. The only like coach opening that was possible was going to be the Timberwolves one, and they already hired the coach midseason, which is teams don't usually do, and we assume McMillan will get the job in Atlanta where they're playing after winning today, especially. And they look pretty decent in the playoffs, so we'll see. So, yeah, there's not really a rush, they're not competing with anybody, for that job, so for the opening. So, there's not like a need to do this today.
We have two more, one's the biggest one, we'll save it for last. The other one is Adam wrote this down. I did not put we both made lists of all the key decisions from this offseason, we had all the same ones except for one. And it was this. Adam typed the Aaron Holiday situation. I didn't really type that. I didn't think that was much of a decision because I don't know if he's in that much of their future considerations at this point. I mean, he wasn't that good this year. He got outplayed by Sumner, TJ, Brogdon, Karras, and missing a guard. Keelan even outplayed him at times when they were playing. So he might. I mean, the reason I think he has more value than just like a single second round pick and like a dump trade basically is like, restricted free agency is very valuable. You know what I mean? Like if he does pop next year, I mean, then you're awesome. Like you're guaranteed to keep him, right? So I wouldn't just throw him out for 1 second, but I understand that he's in a tricky situation where it's like he's young and he can't get minutes given what they have. And they've kind of tried to force him into a role like really hard and it hasn't really done a ton. So we'll see with him. I guess I get what you wrote it down. But his salary could be a tough cog too. It's weird.
So the reason I wrote it down is for like, let's call it like three reasons. One is the 4.3 or 3.9. What's his salary?
3.9.
I'm sorry. Yep. $3.9 million salary, which when you can think about that, they could be like within $1 million or $2 million of the luxury tax. Especially if they try to resign McDermott and McConnell, that's a big deal. So that's where I was thought, like, how do they get rid of that? Second is what is hit? How much you have to attach to the dump, right? The thing, the difference between him and TJ Leaf is Leaf showed absolutely zero signs of being an NBA player. Right. Holiday has shown some signs. And I do think you can't discount the fact that he has a family heritage where two of his brothers are NBA players, one an elite level player, the other one like has definitely found a spot in the league.
On his team.
Yeah, but like, so there's something about like a team being like, oh, I bet if we just get the Holiday brother in, we can kind of make him work. The Pacers are screwing it up. But I think also the Aaron got the short end of the genetic stick where he's the shortest one of the three players, where if he was 6'4", he'd probably be a starting point guard in the league. Probably would have gone 18. Probably would have gotten top 10, frankly, but he's a little bit shorter and that is hurting him a little bit right now because he plays more like a two guard and he just doesn't have the size. Sorry to be that, frankly.
I'll talk about X interviews on a pod later this week, but I'm glad he brought that up because in his X interview, Jay Michael was asking about like his role in the NBA and stuff like that. And he's like, yeah, I played like off ball guard. I was guarding Davis Bertans in the playing game. Like he's 6'8". You know, I'm Aaron Holiday. Yeah. 6 feet tall. Right.
If,
like
if the Aaron roster was 3 inches taller, he would be an elite NBA, not elite, but he'd be somewhere between Justin and Drew and their level of NBA playing. He'd be better than Justin probably.
He looks like an off ball guard, but he kind of needs the ball because he's short and he's also like tries really hard on defense, but because he's playing alongside McConnell, they put him on tall. He had a weird year and it was mostly bad. Like, I'm not going to write it off. It's just like he was in the wrong role. You know what I mean? Like, even when he had the ball, it didn't go awesome. But
which is disappointing because he looked really decent, really good in the bubble last year. And I thought, oh, maybe he sort of.
His rookie and sophomore year are both pretty promising.
And so there is that chance too. Maybe the Pacers just like, we don't want to go play him yet. Maybe we chalk up to a bad season, COVID.
COVID season.
Blame everything on that. Just keep doing that. Say,
all right, you're right. This is more interesting than I thought. I regret it.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, is there, because he showed enough signs where, like, trade him for nothing, which is what we'd have to do. Hopefully, we wouldn't get more than a second round pick. But like, if you just salary dump him, like we were talking about it before the show, you can't. It's two first round picks salary dumped in a row.
They would not salary dump him. I don't think they would do it.
Okay, I mean that's
fair. I get why they would from the salary perspective, but I just from an optics, honestly.
No, but that's what I mean. But like,
but I just don't think they would.
So then it's like, maybe you just give him another shot. Maybe a new coach. I mean, if the new coach can make, says, I believe in Aaron Holiday to be the, maybe he puts him in the point guard. They make him the point guard and get rid of McCollum. I mean, there's some of that. I mean, that's, that was probably the long-term plan originally, right? Is Aaron Holiday by this point would step in and be the backup point guard. They wouldn't need to re-sign McConnell. Like, that would have made perfect sense. But now they're kind of in a gray area.
Yeah. It, yeah, exactly. And TJ McConnell's inclusion on the team kind of made, kind of his, not derailed, but like has altered his career. Like,
he's out. McConnell's well, he's not back.
It makes more sense to keep him around, maybe. So,
well, what's also kind of disappointing is like you would think a guy like McConnell would push Aaron Holiday to play to be better, because McConnell's just a, he's, what is like the right way to put it? He's a pest, right? Like, that's well, how he plays basketball.
Exactly the same position. Yeah.
No, I know, but you would think it would motivate him and to like try to outwork him and outplay him. And, you know, because McConnell has similar size, has had to fight for pretty much everything in the league because of his height. It's the same thing with Aaron Holiday. And he would hope that would sort of motivate him. But it seems like McConnell's just running circles around him most of the time.
Yeah. All right. That's the big one. Look.
Yeah.
Look, and Adam will run through the numbers again later this week. Maybe not later this week, but at some point this offseason.
Yeah, at some point. We'll see.
Turbonis, like, look, I get it. They're two really good players. It's hard for the Pacers to get really good players who are young and under contract for a long time. They're both great. Let's keep around. Like, I get it. And they've been promising signs of them being good together at times, but there's also been a lot more times where it doesn't work together. They both make a lot. Eventually, they have to move on. And maybe this summer is the time to do it. This team just had an awful season. They've got to figure out something out how to get better, maybe something dramatic, right? You can't bank on continuity being good for you and then have continuity not be good for you. So the easiest way to make big moves with those guys, they tried to deal one last summer. It's not a secret.
No, last winter, Tony. Remember, Brady?
Sorry. Last winter.
Sorry. I just.
So how they navigate that will, I mean, that's the biggest roster story of the offseason to me. More than any free agent, more than any guy who could or could not be back, even more than the coaching thing, is do they finally split this up? And if so, what? How do they do it? And that could dictate a lot of the other stuff from the show.
Right. That's the third offseason in a row. This will be the biggest storyline, probably.
It's funny how it's changed, right?
Well,
two offseasons ago, it was, can these guys start together? Because they are looking for a bigger Sabonis role. Then last year was, how can they make this optimized? And then it was a lot of like, oh, Bjork will be able to do it. And then this year it's, okay, we're out of time.
So the problem is they definitely should have gotten a deal done last year, and the team that they were just with a bad partner, frankly. The team they were going to move with isn't a good faith trading team. I think that's been clear across the league pretty much. Like, I mean, Boston is just trying to screw you instead of trying to actually make a deal. I think if you talk to every GM, they might say that. Like, Boston doesn't care about making deals. They just want to look good at the end of it and pretend they almost got the player they said they were going to get. And that would have made the best. And that was the best probably like move they could have got. So then my question is, what moves are there out there that are actually better than running it back, right? We know running it back, if they have the right coach, which we saw at McMillan, it's a good team. 45, 40 wins, not special. It's not going to blow your socks up, but it can be a 45 to 50 win team that is competitive, and borderline can win a playoff series, right? If things go right, and especially if they can stay 100 healthy for once in their freaking lives, which I doubt it they will be up to next year, but we'll see. So then what is the better move? Where is the three or the four that out there they can get for one of those guys to flip? And then who do you flip? And so it's a big question, and it's still hard to do because I just don't know if there's a perfect kind of fit to trade either one of those guys to. And I think
well,
I have my favorite
that.
Choice.
We could do a whole show on that too.
Yeah. But well, this is only the beginning of what will be probably like seven podcasts on this eventually. This
oh, yeah. And the thing with those two guys is they also both make so much that if you're able to dump them into a team space, even like you could alter so much of your planning in the offseason. Like,
yeah, but to me, you don't just dump one of them. You're mainly
saying no. Like in the space for no money in return, but you also get assets. Like, I'm not saying salary dump them.
Yeah, I mean, you convinced me because of O'Shea's growth that you could get rid of one for like a longer term asset instead of like a short term asset, right? You could like maybe talking into that, right? Like, you could say like trade one for a pick, use that pick to replenish your terrible drafting the past 4 years, whatever you want to call it. But like, I don't know. I think at the end of the day, they don't, like I said, they were under McMillan, who is a not really like I guess he is kind of a really good coach or ex-NOG. I don't know what it is. He's a very good coach. So I probably shouldn't, but like, not some
playoff
like
win today.
Yeah, you got to play off him, but not some like gene. Like McMillan isn't like some revolutionary genius. He's just very good at like, here's how we're going to play and we're going to win. It's going to be consistent. And it's going to be good. They got to like almost 50 wins that season, right? If you took their winning percentage in the shortened COVID season, they would have won like 50, I think 51, 52 games. So like it is possible to be decent with those two players. It's just, it limits your potential of being like really good, I think.
I agree.
So anyways, that's all on that.
That's everything, I think, in terms of the big decisions. Now, there could be more. Like, I think a lot of people are turning on Brogdon in my mentions, which is interesting. I don't think there's a decision.
He just had the best year of his career and slightly hurt.
It's mostly people talking about injuries, but
he missed, what, 16, 17 games, and I guarantee they were in a more competitive situation, maybe have come back a little sooner and pushed a little harder, but, like, they weren't, so why would he bother?
Yep.
Kind of thing. Like I don't know. He played – how much?
I don't think it merits a show. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what he ended up playing like 70.
That I know, I would say it does not.
He basically played the same amount of games the last two seasons. They played the same amount. Like, that's – and he put up ridiculous numbers this year. Like,
yeah, I think he's the best player on the team, so.
Yeah, I think Sabonis could be the best player on the team, but yeah.
That's not for this show.
No, it's not. It's not, really.
That's for other shows in the future. So this week –
we have gone 50 minutes almost, Tony.
This week coming up, Kevin Pritchard's press conference, if you're listening, Monday is that day. But could, you know, a lot could happen. I don't know when you're listening. Anyway, sorry. I just had to look at something on my phone. So we'll break that down tomorrow, what he said, what that means for the stuff we talked about today. And then Wednesday, I want to do a show. I asked every player who's a free agent on their exit interview about their free agency, share their reactions and their quotes directly from their mouths. So there is no mincing of words. Adam, I don't know what you're going
to
be talking about.
So Thursday this is kind of an open slot right now. I think we'll have to see where, coaching is at, and that would kind of play a factor in that. But if not, I've got a couple of topic ideas. Might do the center thing, might do something else. And then we'll do a locker room. I'll do locker room this week as well. And we'll just sort of, again, we'll play it by ear to see what happens with the coach. Cause I don't want to just like do a locker room on like Wednesday and the coach get fired Friday. Cause then we'll be talking about, nothing interesting.
Friday, I can't share what's going to happen because it's still in the works, but we'll see what happens. So yeah, a lot of fun stuff this week. Everyone's favorite time, off season stuff.
Yeah, we'll be doing 5 podcasts a week, pretty much through free agency, which is early August, first week of August. So we'll be here providing you content. At some point, we'll do player reviews, but that probably be for a little while because we got a lot of stuff to talk about. But we have a tentative planned mailbag for next week. But if coaching things could delay a lot of stuff, because if the coach gets fired and there's all these moves that could change how we do things. But yeah, look for that. We appreciate you guys joining us this off season. It was a long season. I know it wasn't maybe the most exciting NBA Pacers season we've had, certainly, not being in the playoffs is not great, but it was, still fun to do it. And we're glad you guys stuck here with us. And now we're in what I think is, probably the most popular part of the NBA like experience. And that is the off season. So we appreciate you guys sticking with us through this off season. As always, you can follow this podcast at Locked On Pacers, me at FreeManof5 on Twitter, Tony at TeastNBA. That is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast, and we'll see you guys again tomorrow.